From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, October 15th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Attorneys for 100 victims and survivors of the worst mass shooting in Maine history have taken the first step to pursue civil lawsuits over the 18 deaths, physical injuries, and trauma that occurred at a bowling alley and a bar in Lewiston nearly a year ago. As Susan Sharon reports, they've filed notices of claim demanding accountability from the Army, the Army Reserve, and Army medical providers who say they failed to stop the shooter despite multiple warnings and missteps.
In an emotional news conference at the Franco Center in Lewiston, dozens of shooting victims' family members and survivors, many wearing Lewiston Strong shirts, stood behind attorneys representing four law firms. If the Army and its partners reject their individual claims or fail to take action, the attorneys say they're prepared to file a lawsuit in federal court.
Many of the people that are standing with us watched as their friends and their family members were shot and killed in front of them at that bowling alley and that bar.
Attorney Ben Gideon says that in addition to the victims, others who were not there that night waited for hours only to learn that someone they loved would not be coming home to them. In their notices, the claimants say the Army and its personnel were aware for at least 7 months that Army Reserve Sergeant Robert Card's mental health was in a severe decline that left him delusional with violent ideations and limited impulse control. His behavior became so alarming that his Army command ordered him to be evaluated at a military hospital, which then transferred him to a private psychiatric facility. It was there that Card admitted to having a hit list of people he intended to kill. When it came time for his release from the hospital, Gideon says the Army failed to take necessary action that was a condition for his discharge.
Our claim details how the Army let Robert Card returned to this community without informing local law enforcement of critical details, including his doctor's directive that he no longer have access to weapons.
The notices do not currently target the Four Winds psychiatric facility where Card was hospitalized for 2 weeks, but attorney Travis Brennan says that could change once Card's complete medical records are received.
And we think that's going to be critical in terms of filling in important pieces of the puzzle in terms of not only what his providers were thinking on a day-to-day basis, but their communications with people in the Army chain of command.
Over the past year, an independent commission and the Army have investigated what led up to the shooting and what went wrong. The Army Inspector General's report concluded that Card was, quote, singularly responsible for this tragedy. But Brennan says that conclusion ignores the fact that warning signs were repeatedly overlooked and that there were multiple opportunities where the Army could have intervened and did not. That includes a lengthy text message from Card's best friend and fellow reservist Sean Hodgson to their command 6 weeks before the shooting. In it, Hodgson said Card had threatened their unit and other places. "Please," he wrote, "I believe he is going to snap and do a mass shooting." Attorneys contend that the Army downplayed the risk Card posed and failed to take the proper steps to remove his guns or get him help.
The Army bureaucracy failed Robert Card. The Army bureaucracy failed this state and community, and it failed our clients.
The Army maintains it did nothing wrong, and Brennan says that must be challenged.
Our clients are taking this important next step because they want accountability, they want answers, and they want fair and just compensation for what happened to them.
I don't want this to happen to any other family.
One of the claimants is Liz Seal, who lost her husband Josh Seal in the shooting. He was one of four deaf men who were killed that night. Speaking through an interpreter, Liz said Josh was her anchor, and she's grateful their four deaf children, ages 4 to 13, have special memories of their dad.
However, he's not here anymore, and I'm left with four children who miss their father tremendously.
Liz says Josh accomplished a lot in his 36 years. He was a certified deaf interpreter and established a camp for deaf and hard of hearing children. But she says he had so much more to do.
And for those of us who are victims and survivors, the emotional and physical trauma will stay with us forever. Once justice is served, I feel maybe we can start that process of healing. But in the meantime, we're going to stay Lewiston strong.
The Army has 6 months to respond to the claims. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Today is the last day to register online to vote in the November 5th elections. Mainers can register through the Secretary of State's website at maine.gov/vote by the end of the day. The deadline is for online registrations only. Voters can still register to vote in person at their town office, city hall, or any motor vehicle branch office. Maine also offers same-day voter registration, meaning eligible residents can register to vote on Election Day at their polling location. Maine has seen a surge in voter registrations over the last month and a half, with an average of 5,000 online registrations each week since early September. Starting on the first of the year, employers and workers in Maine will begin contributing to the state's paid family medical leave program, which offers up to 12 weeks of paid time off per year to eligible employees. Program Director Luke Monahan says an online contribution portal will become active early next year.
That will be the actual system that will be rolling out in early 2025, in which employers can register their businesses with the Maine Paid Family Medical Leave Program so that they can do their contribution and wage reporting and remit the premiums to the state quarterly.
Employers with 15 or more workers will split a 1% premium equally with their workers. For businesses with fewer employees, a 0.5% premium will be covered by the workers. Monahan says four webinars will be held over the next 2 weeks to educate employers and employees on the program and answer questions about their responsibilities and requirements. More details can be found at maine.gov/paid leave. Maine is known for its vivid displays of autumn color, but climate change is making it harder for scientists to predict when foliage season will start or how long it will last. Peter McGuire has more.
Fall days and nights are getting warmer, which is changing when trees stop producing chlorophyll. That process allows yellow, red, and orange pigments to come through in leaves that eventually drop off. It's unclear if warmer seasons will disrupt the foliage process to the point that leaves will drop off before fully developing colors, says Aaron Bergdahl with the Maine Forest Service.
These are questions that we just don't know the answer to because the rules of the game have changed. What we thought we knew about fall foliage is really up in the air right now.
Research from Acadia National Park shows peak foliage season arrives more than a week later than it did in the 1950s. And by 2060, that period could shift to late October and early November. But Bergdahl says thanks to healthy Maine forests and a diverse landscape, leaf peepers should always be able to find some beautiful foliage somewhere. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 tomorrow morning, a closer look at porcupines. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.